The following recording was produced by Christ Redeemer Church of Hanover, New Hampshire. The speaker is Doug Cooper. You may find more information on the church and its various resources on the web at www.christredeemerchurch.org.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Doug Cooper, and I'm the pastor of Christ Restoration Church. On a normal Sunday, we gather at Colby Sawyer College in New London at the Lethbridge Lodge. Right now, to steal some language from the New Testament, you could say that we're presently a scattered church. And by that, I don't mean that we're scatterbrained, although that may be the truth of the matter. I'll speak for myself anyhow. In my own experience, as of late, it's been hard to keep track of what day of the week it is. But we're a scattered church. In the sense that circumstantially, anyhow, we're scattered like seed right now. Bodily, we're apart from one another. Now, thankfully, however, we're still able to share in life together in many ways. And thankfully, when we gather together here, we're able to get on the same page together, literally speaking. And so for this Sunday, in terms of getting on the same page, we're actually going to jump back into the New Testament letter of James. I've been looking forward to this. Now, in case maybe you've not been with us for very long, for instance, maybe you're visiting with us, maybe you're visiting with us for the first time, and if that's the case, I just want to say welcome. I wish I could be welcoming you in person, but this will have to do for now. Or maybe you've just been away for a good time, and so let me just say that as a church, we started a sermon series in the letter of James going back to early January. And after reaching about the midway point of the letter, we decided to take a break from it, and we took a month to work through the book of Habakkuk from the Old Testament, which was a pretty interesting experience. It proved to be very timely. You could even say it was providential in light of this pandemic that we presently find ourselves in. It was just kind of wild how it connected with us in the things that we were beginning to go through at that time. But then, for the last 2 weeks leading up to this morning, we also, of course, had Palm Sunday and then Easter Sunday. So all that to say, it's been a little while since we were in the letter of James together. And so I think it would be a good idea for me to take a minute, maybe a few minutes, to just get us reacquainted with the letter. And for the sake of time, I think what I'm going to do is I'm just going to rattle off like a bullet list of little descriptors and features of the letter. So I hope this helps. Here goes. This was very likely written by James, the younger brother of Jesus. And this is considered to be one of the earliest documents that actually make up the New Testament. Not exactly sure how early, but early. And at the time that this was written, that the early church seems to have been, to use this word once again, scattered. The early church was scattered due to persecution. So James is writing to a scattered group of people. Many have made correlations between this letter and the scenes that we find, many scenes that we find in the book of Acts, beginning with the stoning of Stephen. So there's your connection point. And then beyond those background highlights, this, you could say, is a very uniquely practical letter. It's extremely direct. In fact, it's almost stabbing in its directness in times. It's in your face, I guess you could say. And here's another thing. It's almost proverbial. I mean, it almost reads like the Proverbs at times in the way that James quickly moves from one thought to the next thought, offering wisdom, offering a wise instruction about practical matters of life and of faith. And then the title of this sermon series, if you don't know, is James, A Faith That Works. And I think that really captures the tone of this letter altogether. James is concerned with us having a practical faith, a relevant, living, active, engaged sort of a faith. A faith that works, right? And as it relates to this, James has repeatedly emphasized that in order for our faith to work, to work properly, we need to maintain a clear and proper view of who God is, of who He really is. In other words, we need to have a singular view of God that leads to a singular affection for God, rather than, to use some of James' speech here, rather than being double-minded, or I think you could even say double-hearted. And up to this point, James has had us considering this from several different angles. So I'm just going to list off some of our sermon titles. I think that'll clue us in on how James has been leading us along. So we've considered a faith that works through troubles. We've considered a faith that works through temptations, a faith that works through obedience, through differences, through compassion, through the word, through our words, like our speech. And so then now, this morning, as we jump back into this letter, we're actually going to come back around to the beginning. I think that's the way for us to kind of reinsert ourselves into this. And this time around, we're going to consider something that we had spent a little bit of time on looking at early on. And I think that this is especially timely to do this and worth our while, just in light of all that we have been going through as of late and will surely continue to experience as we navigate this pandemic. And so we're going to consider this morning what it might look like for us to have a faith that works through perseverance. What does it mean to persevere? How should we think about that? What might that actually look like? How are we to engage with God in a persistent way, in a persevering way? And so here are a few things for us as we work this out together. Feel free to write these things down if you'd like to take notes along the way. I've got three things for us. So as it relates to perseverance, we want to understand what it is. So here we're looking to kind of give a definition to this. Next, we want to understand how it works. So, what's the process? We're looking for a way of engagement, a way forward. And then lastly, we want to understand where it leads. So we're considering the goal and motivation of perseverance for this last point. So let me list those off for you one more time. So again, understanding what it is, understanding how it works, and then understanding where it leads. Now, before we continue on, let's have you do this. Go ahead and hit pause on this recording, and then please take a few minutes to read through our printed passage. You can find it on the webpage that you're likely on right now. This is James chapter 1, verses 2 through 4, as well as verse 12 of chapter 1 also. And once you've done that, once you've finished through that reading, you can hit play again and continue on through the rest of this message. So you can go ahead and do that right now. Okay. So to begin with, understanding what it is. So what it is, like, what is it? What is perseverance? And I assume we've probably got a pretty good sense of it. And there's a bunch of words and phrases that you could throw around just to try to capture it. And I'll do that right now. So, I mean, like resilience, for instance, grit, stick-to-itiveness, tenacity. Or here's one that I threw together. I hope you like it as much as I do. Unswerving doggedness. Or here's another phrase for you. This is an old phrase. You may know it. To keep on keeping on, right? And on that last one, I like the way that Bob Dylan put it to use in his classic song, Tangled Up in Blue. A little bit of it goes like this. And when finally the bottom fell out, I became withdrawn. The only thing I knew how to do was to keep on keeping on like a bird that flew, tangled up in blue. And I think that sounds about right, you know, or at the very least, that's certainly a big part of it, to keep on keeping on, right? To stay the course, even when it feels as though the bottom has fallen out, even when we do legitimately feel withdrawn, feel sunk. Despite that, somehow we continue to put one foot in front of the other and then another and then another. This seems to be the idea that's coming across here in the text. For instance, James 1:12, it says this: blessed is the one who perseveres under trial, because having stood the test, that person will receive the crown of life that the Lord has promised to those who love him. And so I think that's an accurate description of perseverance, as most people understand it. To keep on keeping on, to endure. And I assume we get that. We may not always succeed at it, but we get it, right? However, and I think that this is critical, so hear this. James here, I believe, has something in mind that's a bit different and a bit more dynamic than this common understanding of perseverance. Because remember, I said this already, he's striving to see this in all things with a clear-eyed view of God. He's thinking about perseverance, not in a general way, but in light of Jesus. And so how does the gospel of Christ redefine and recast what it means for us to be a persevering people? I think that that's the real question here, because when Jesus enters the picture, for any one of us, everything needs to be recalibrated to align with his reality. So how does the reality of Jesus alter our understanding, alter our approach, and even our experience of perseverance? And to answer that, I think we actually need to move beyond just a mere definition of perseverance. We need to move on to the process of perseverance. We need a more three-dimensional view of this in order to better understand it. So understanding what it is, that was our first point. And we've begun to scratch the surface of that, but we actually need more information. And so that's where our second point comes in, which is understanding how it works. And this is about the process, or you could say this is about the way of perseverance. So let's do this. Let's just start at the top. So if you would, please look back with me, beginning at verse 2. James says this: "Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work, so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything." And so right out of the gate, I think there's something fishy about this particular brand of perseverance that we find in the New Testament. He says, "Count it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds." So that's different, right? I mean, I see lots of people struggling in the face of all sorts of things, and I see lots of resilience, like really inspiring resilience. I'm sure I'm not the only one. I'm sure you see this too. But what I don't see, I don't see too many people who are overjoyed by what they're going through in those sorts of experiences. I don't see too many folks who are celebrating their struggles. But James says, count it all joy. And actually, this little phrase, count it all joy, it's loaded. It communicates a whole lot with very little. And here's what it does. It clues us into the process of perseverance. Now, at first glance, it's not what it seems, I don't think. This, for me anyhow, I mean, this can come off as something quite different from what it actually is. Because it almost seems to be saying something really trite. Like, hey, I know the bottom's falling out in your life, but look on the bright side, brother. Turn that frown upside down, sister. Tomorrow's another day. Keep on the sunny side. Hang in there. Just keep putting one foot in front of the other. Everything's going to be peachy. However, one of the things that this actually tells us is that the way of perseverance isn't found by focusing on either positivity, or perseverance itself, even, or any combination of those two things. In other words, within this new gospel reality, perseverance isn't about merely gutting it out with a grin. It isn't about simply staying positive and muscling through. And by the way, when we're really struggling for long periods of time, we can tend to cycle through these two modes, these two things. So, I mean, just take this pandemic, for instance. For most of us, this is clearly presenting us with a moment that requires perseverance on our part. And for you, I don't know, maybe you started out, it's been a while now, right? It's been several weeks. Maybe you started out on the positive side, trying to look on the bright side, looking for that silver lining, embracing the changes, embracing the opportunities. And of course, let me just say, that's good. I mean, in a certain sense, we should be doing that all the time, not just during pandemics, right? But again, we're talking about the way of perseverance right now. And in the process of perseverance, positivity will only take you so far down the road for most of us. You can only travel so far with that. And then you'll start to wear that gear out. The gear will start to slip and you'll have to shift gears. In fact, you'll probably have to downshift. And I'd be willing to guess that many of us have already done that. We're kind of like beyond that. And that will put you in less of a positivity mode and into what I would call like a plow mode. You know, like you downshift, and now it's head down and just plowing ahead. And this is what Bob was singing about, right? And when finally the bottom fell out, I became withdrawn. The only thing I knew how to do was to keep on keeping on, like a bird that flew. I just got to keep on flapping these wings of mine. I just got to put my head down and just keep right on moving, keep right on pushing through. When the going gets, you know what they say, when the going gets tough, the tough get going, right? And speaking of the long, uncertain road of this pandemic that we find ourselves in, this reminds me of a scene from a Tom Hanks movie, actually. So for many of us, just to contextualize where this little thought bubble came from, for many of us, the moment that we realized that this pandemic was legitimately like larger than life, that it was in fact becoming a pandemic, was when the news came down that Tom Hanks and his wife Rita Wilson had both contracted the virus while in Australia, which is a side note. It's kind of a funny thing because, well, they're just people after all, right? They're not superhumans. I mean, their bodies are just as susceptible as ours are. But for some reason, like learning that Forrest Gump has the coronavirus, it's got a kind of a shock value to it. It makes you think like, whoa, like something just shifted. Like this thing is really out there. It's really happening. We may actually be into something deep here. And I don't know if you saw his comment that was posted on Twitter and, you know, made it into a bunch of news sources and so on. But, you know, he was kind of given an update about he and his wife, how they were managing things. And at the end of that Twitter update, he wrote this: "Remember, despite all the current events, there is no crying in baseball." Which, if you know where that's coming from, that's funny. Like, that is hysterical. I'm not sure if you have seen the film A League of Their Own. It came out 1992. It was about one of the first women's baseball leagues that emerged during World War I. And Tom Hanks is in this film. He plays the coach of that film. He plays a not so empathetic coach. And I think that what goes on, how we get to that phrase, "there's no crying in baseball," is one of the ladies is coming off of the field after doing some bad fielding, something to that effect. And so she's coming off the field, and Tom Hanks chews her out. I mean, he just reams her. And as he's walking away, she starts to whimper. She starts to cry. And then he turns around, and he realizes that she's crying. And he says, "Are you crying? There's no crying. There's no crying in baseball." And then he manages to, what happens next is he gets kicked off of the field after insulting the umpire. It gives you a little bit of a sense of his character, but I mean, it's goofy. It's intended to be a humorous scene, but of course the coach, Tom Hanks, was essentially saying to this woman, "You gotta buck up." And in a sense, I suppose, with tongue in cheek, that's what Tom was suggesting to us on Twitter as it pertains to this pandemic, that we're going to need to collectively, all of us, buck up a bit if we want to see this thing through to the other side. And of course, there's something about that that's very needful and very helpful. Sometimes the only way to get down the road is to do that very thing, to buck up and to plow ahead. But once again, James, I got to keep coming back around on this. We're really going to try to drill down on this. James has something a bit different in mind here. Not something less than what Coach Tom is suggesting, or the real Tom is suggesting, but something far more than what he's suggesting, a bit more than that. And the problem for some of us is that we can get pretty far down the road driving in these gears that I'm talking about, just grinning and bearing it, plowing ahead. And for some of us, this is like, I mean, this is just cruise control. I mean, this is just the way that we roll, and we can keep right on rolling. But here's the problem with that. Here's the difference that I believe James is presenting us with here. If that's my main gear, if that's what's driving me, you know, like gutting it out with a grin or anything along that spectrum, if that's how you're persevering and getting yourself down the road, then I think James would say to us, would tell us, that we may not be on the right road. That you may not actually be traveling along the way of perseverance. And so here's a good question for us, I think. How do you know? Like, how do you know if you're traveling along the way of perseverance? And if you are, here's where your journey began. At some point along the way, you came to realize that you were lost. I'm sticking with this driving metaphor, this car metaphor, okay? You came to realize that you were lost with no map to be found. At some point along the way, you came to realize that your gears were slipping and that you needed not just a new transmission, but a total overhaul, a complete work of restoration. And that's when the reality of Jesus dropped. That's when the reality of Jesus suddenly became very real to you, and then you were on your way. And if that's you, Jesus wants to shift you into a completely different gear. He wants to put you in a completely different gear as you navigate the long, uncertain road that's before you, whatever that may be, and I don't know what it is. But here's how it works. I'm going to reread. Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature, incomplete, not lacking anything. So what is he talking about? Consider what pure joy? Other versions say, count it all joy. So, you know, chalk it up to joy. And this may sound familiar from the last time that we were in this passage together, but get this. James isn't demanding that they should feel a particular way. Like, man, you ought to be feeling this way. Rather than that, he's encouraging them to be thinking in a particular way. Consider this. Count this to be this way. So the people he's writing to, again, they're disoriented. They're disoriented on the road that they find themselves on. Remember, this is a scattered and persecuted group of people. The road is rough. The road is slick. Visibility is compromised. It's hard to see what's around the next bend. They're tempted maybe to just throw in the towel and to just give up on the race. And James is encouraging them to consider the road that they're on, to consider what the actual rules of this road, what they are. That this isn't about them placing their faith in their own ability to, you know, bang gears and plow ahead. Rather, the way of perseverance is to rest in the faithfulness and perseverance of God. To leave the driving up to him. Is Eugene Peterson put it so well. He says this, the central reality for Christians is the personal, unalterable, persevering commitment God makes to us. Perseverance is not the result of our determination. It is the result of God's faithfulness. We survive in the way of faith, not because we have extraordinary stamina, but because God is righteous, because God sticks with us. That's the end of that quote. He's the one who possesses the real stick-to-itiveness, not us. He's the one with unswerving doggedness in his love and in his pursuit of us, not the other way around. He is the good shepherd that leads the 99. He's the father that runs out to embrace us while we're still a ways off and kills the fatted lamb and throws the party and celebrates, not us. If perseverance were to depend upon us, we would certainly be sunk, okay? And we need the bottom to fall out in order to begin to realize that. And when we do, maybe, just maybe, we'll begin to consider it all joy when everything else seems to be against us. Because if he's behind the wheel, as hard as the road may be, as rough as the conditions may be, nothing can truly drive us over the edge of that cliff. If perseverance depends upon him and what he's done for us on our behalf and the unfailing, indestructible nature of his love, then nothing can truly undo us. Nothing. And knowing that will give you resilience. I mean, if you're kind of like, what is this? I just kind of sit in the back seat. I do nothing. No, not at all. Knowing what I was just describing, that will give you resilience It'll give you grit. It'll give you that tenacity. Knowing that nothing, nothing can wreck his love and his lasting commitment to you. The literal power of that will empower you to keep on keeping on like a bird that flew. To keep on flapping those wings. To keep on putting one foot in front of the other. To persevere in the face of trials and troubles of all sorts, of all kinds. And one more, this is important, one more brief word on the process of perseverance before we move on to our last point. Notice that James says this. He says, consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters. He didn't have to say it that way. In other words, the way of perseverance is not intended to be a road that we travel alone. The way of perseverance is a family affair. We need one another to do this and to do it well. So, as it relates to perseverance, we have considered what it is, we've considered how it works, and now lastly, let's consider where it leads. In other words, what's the goal or the motivation of perseverance? Where is it leading? Where is it taking us? And briefly, I want to highlight two things on this last point. One of the things that this particular experience of perseverance leads to is maturity. And we see that in verse 4. Please look back with me at that one more time. James says, let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. And on this, just think with me. Think of any living thing. Think of any living organism, and what is it? What is it that produces maturity in those things? And I believe it comes down to facing challenges under the right conditions. For instance, listen to this from the prophet Jeremiah. This is from Jeremiah chapter 17, beginning at verse 7. Blessed is the one who trusts in the Lord, whose confidence is in him. They will be like a tree planted by the water, that sends out its roots by the stream. So there's your good and right conditions, okay? It's planted by the water. And he goes on to say this about this tree. It does not fear when heat comes. Its leaves are always green. It has no worries in a year of drought and never fails to bear fruit. In other words, what? It perseveres. And coming back to us, we already talked about those good and right conditions for us. They involve us living under the good and right word of the gospel in relationship, in connection, side by side with others, brothers and sisters. That's what allows perseverance to put down roots in our lives. That's where it leads. It leads to maturity. It leads to, you could say, a strong trunk and beautiful foliage and bearing good fruit. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. And then the other place where perseverance leads us is found in verse 12, our last printed verse. And this starts out the very, I notice this, it starts out the very same way as the Jeremiah passage, as verse 7 of Jeremiah 17. It says this, blessed is the one who perseveres under trial, because having stood the test, that person will receive the crown of life that the Lord has promised to those who love him. In other words, perseverance leads us home. That's why this is a totally different road, okay? This is a totally different road we're on. It literally, not figuratively, it literally leads the way to the Lord of life, where we will one day experience his presence and his favor in full and unending. This long and uncertain road that we're on right now, even through this pandemic, will one day come to an end, and we'll be home. And this is why we count it all joy. This is why we endure, right? Let me just broaden our perspective a little bit. Leading up to the crucifixion, Jesus said this to the 12. He said, do not let your hearts be troubled. Do not let your hearts be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. My Father's house has many rooms. If that were not so, would I have told you that I'm going there to prepare a place for you? And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come back and take you to be with me, that you also may be where I am. How about that? And just before he was taken to be crucified, he told them in a different place something quite similar. He said this, "Behold, the hour is coming. Indeed, it has come when you will be scattered, each to his own home, and will leave me alone." So, I mean, time out. In other words, what is Jesus saying? He's saying, you'll abandon me. You won't persevere with me. And of course, this is exactly what happened, right? Judas betrayed him. They all ran off into the night. Peter denies him 3 times, right? "Behold, the hour is coming. Indeed, it has come when you will be scattered, each to his own home, and will leave me alone. Yet, I am not alone, for the Father is with me. I have said these things to you that in me, in the persevering one, you may have peace. In the world, you will have tribulation, you will have trouble, but take heart, take courage, for I have overcome the world." Man, I tell you what, that's a good and better word right there. And so, fear not, little flock, for it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. And Father, we thank you, and we pray that you would, being the generous Father that you are, we ask that you would give us perseverance, that you would give us the peace of your Son as we continue to travel along in your way. And we pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. Take care, all. See you soon.